The U.S. House of Representatives voted this month to kill funding for public media. The legislation would cut $1.1 billion allocated to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which distributes nearly all its funds to local television and radio stations. The U.S. Senate must now decide whether to finalize those cuts. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about the impact these cuts could have on public media locally are Cincinnati Public Radio President and CEO Richard Eisworth. Welcome back, Rich.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And CET and Think TV President and CEO Kitty Lensman. Thanks for being here, Kitty.
Thanks, Lucy. Pleasure to be here.
As I mentioned earlier this month, the U.S. House voted to claw back funding. Kitty, any idea where this stands, when the Senate could vote on this?
Well, my understanding as of last week is that the Senate is due to go into a conference session, I believe it's called, tomorrow. So we'll see what the result of that is probably by the end of the day.
Mm. Rich, you think we could know something about this by as soon as tomorrow?
We'll know something about how far it's progressed. It's not likely. I mean, the whole Senate has to vote on this, and they're certainly not going to be able to do that tomorrow. The most recent estimate I've got, Kitty, unless you've heard something else, is it's likely to happen after the July recess.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I think you're correct, Rich, but I think it actually bodes well that they are going into conference, that they don't have the simple majority just to pass the bill as it stands.
Okay. Well, you know, President Trump and his supporters in Congress, they've been arguing that public radio and public TV have become too liberal and that they are too often mouthpieces for the Democratic Party. Rich, how do you respond to that argument?
This is an old trope that goes, unfortunately, way back through the strains of some people in the conservative wing of the Republican Party. The fact of the matter is public media, public TV and radio have been the recipient of strong bipartisan support ever since 1967 when the Public Broadcasting Act was founded. What I hear most often is that there are complaints that, as you said, there are stories from time to time that some people in the Trump administration take exception to on NPR dealing with some issues that contradict or disapprove in the current administration's view of a political nature. The unfortunate thing is that when you consider that on an average day, a public radio station is going to broadcast along with NPR and its local news sources hundreds of stories. It isn't surprising at all that an average listener is going to hear one or two stories that he or she may not agree with. I mean, that's happens to be the result of the scope of stories we cover. I'm going to be honest. There are stories that I've heard nationally and locally that maybe represent views that I may take issue with, but that's part of the process of a democracy. You're going to hear, or you should hear, in a good media source or good medium, a variety of voices, a variety of aspects, a variety of opinions. Some you'll agree with, some you won't. But that doesn't mean that because you're hearing things you don't agree with, you should strike out and oppose or try to silence those voices. I think in a functioning democracy, you need to hear people with opinions that differ from yours.
Kitty, how do you respond to that argument that public broadcasting has just become too liberal?
Well, we're a little bit different in the sense that, you know, only about 10% of what we broadcast nationally is political or journalistic in nature. What I would like to remind our public is that the 90% of content that is such high quality, that's educational in nature, you know, the natures, the novas, the, you know, things for lifelong learners, that is so vastly important to our communities and the local content that we produce. So, you know, I think agreeing with Rich, it needs to be fair and balanced, but there is so much more to public media. You know, I don't know if our public is aware of this or not, but we are the backbone of the emergency alert system. And we're teaching teachers how to use technology. We're, you know, helping families prepare their preschoolers for, you know, for school. So there's so much more on a local level to be lost if this rescission package was to go through.
We're talking about the threat of federal funding cuts for public broadcasting. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. That number again, 513-419-7100. Rich, how much of Cincinnati Public Radio's budget comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting?
On an average year, about 5 to 6%.
And what about for you, Kitty? How much of CET and Think TV's budget comes from there?
We're about 15.5%.
Okay. So, Kitty, where does the majority of CET and Think TV's funding come from?
Yeah, that's a great question, Lucy. So over 60% of our funding comes from the community. And that's from the support of our members, our major donors, our planned giving donors, corporations, local corporations, foundations. It really, you know, the funding we receive from the CPB allows us to raise six times on a dollar of funding from the community. So it is, you know, it really is a community licensed and funded station.
So you said about 15% from Corporation for Public Broadcasting, about 60% from the community. Where does that other chunk come from?
We do receive some state funding, about 6.5%. And then also we have some earned income. In fact, our good friends, Cincinnati Public Radio, used to be tenants in our building upstairs. And that was revenue that we did earn and from the lease, and also reinvested that into our local content and productions.
Rich, how about for Cincinnati Public Radio? You mentioned about 5% mm-hmm. on an average year. Where does the rest of this place's budget come from?
The rest of this budget for this organization comes from primarily listeners like you, members who support us on a sustaining or individual basis. And then beyond that, about a third of the budget will come from local businesses through underwriting corporate sponsorship. And then as with Kitty's operation, we get substantial, very generous and very well appreciated support from local foundations. We, you know, make some earned interest as well. So we're really substantially self-supportive, but that's not to say that the CPB monies, as Kitty indicated, are not valuable to us. They are valuable not only in terms of helping to generate local support, but in the case of public radio especially, the CPB funds our music rights with ASCAP and BMI. So stations such as WVXU or a sister station, WGUC, that is exclusively music, we don't have to pay thousands of dollars directly from our budget to pay for the music rights for the music that we air. And that's critically important. Then finally, the corporation supports the internet connection, the means by which we receive national programming from NPR and other sources through the satellite dish that's right outside the window here. So that kind of critical support is something that we don't have the money for without CPB.
Talk a little bit more about that, Rich. I mean, if that money were to go away, and again, that's an if right now because the Senate has not voted on this legislation, on this rescission package, but what would that mean if it's only 5% of our budget, but those music rights? I mean, you mentioned our sister station, WGUC, is all music. Our station uses music as part of our programming sometimes. What would that mean for Cincinnati Public Radio?
For Cincinnati Public, for all of public media, the overall loss to the system would be existential. For instance, in Ohio, when you look at the grants that radio and TV stations receive from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, more than $3 million a year. And if that is suddenly stricken from the system, then there are a number of stations that simply won't be able to continue to exist. We're fortunate here because we've had tremendously generous local support that has allowed us to increase our budget so that most of the funding, the lion's share, comes from the local community. So we would survive. We will survive. We'll have to tighten our belt. We'll have to make some reductions in services, but we know we're going to be here. The real problem is that for a lot of stations in rural areas, minority-operated stations in Indian reservations, CPB accounts for 40 to 50% of their budget. So last I heard, if federal funding goes away, roughly at least 40, 50 stations in the NPR network would go silent overnight. And there's going to be a ripple effect there because they're paying money for the dues for the programming at NPR just as we are. If NPR loses their revenue, their income, what happens to NPR? They will have to either dramatically increase the charges for the programs that they offer or begin to seriously eliminate programs that they offer to us. So this is a serious threat that we're facing.
Yeah. And what about, I just want to make sure I understand for WGUC specifically, because I know we have a lot of people who listen to both stations. A lot of our listeners right now are also fans of GUC and the musical offerings there. Without those rights, what would that mean? I mean, does that all of a sudden mean thousands and thousands more dollars to pay for that?
Conceivably, yeah. We don't know. And the reason we don't know is that for the last multiple years, CPB has licensed and negotiated blanket rights for public radio and TV. So that what that means is CPB has negotiated directly with the music rights organizations on the behalf of its grantees. Without that representation by CPB, most likely each individual station would have to negotiate rights with the license holders. Who knows what that would entail?
Kitty, what would the impact be for CET and Think TV? I mean, if this funding were to go away, we've heard a lot about what it would mean for more rural stations, like Rich was just alluding to, but what about the public television stations here locally that people count on?
Well, I would agree with Rich, the infrastructure that we would not be able to support financially would be devastating to all of the public television stations. The streaming rights, we're through PBS, we're now available on, Roku and YouTube and all of the different platforms. And PBS picks up that fee on behalf of all the public television stations. So our distribution would be affected. Our support via interconnection and digital services, PBS Learning Media, which is one of the largest resources for teachers and families and students for educational material, that wouldn't be able to be supported by member stations. And I think the most devastating part would be our local services. If we have to somehow increase our own expense lines to support what PBS is now supporting, it has to come from somewhere. And, I think the real value of local public media stations is we are in your community. We are your community stations. And we want to, respond to what the community needs are. And that would be a tough one to support.
We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Ginger. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I just wanted to say I'm very upset about thinking about the cuts to NPR because when Hurricane Ike came up, I had no idea. I had all these damaged trees that I had no idea what to do. And I put with MUB, one of your Cincinnati stations there, had on Mr. Tree. And I called the radio station. I told him about my trees being down and everything. And he just gave me excellent advice. He said, make sure you get an ISA certified arborist. I called many of them on the phone. I got an excellent arborist to come down. They took down the 5 trees I had. It was pretty reasonable for the cost and everything. So it just meant such a, difference to me. That made such a difference in my life because I told him how one tree was like a V and was starting to come down the middle. Mm. And he said, no, that's a dangerous tree.
Yeah.
Ginger, thank you so much. We appreciate those comments and so glad that our tree expert could help you with that. We appreciate your listening, appreciate your call. We are going to continue our conversation about public broadcasting funding after a short break. And later in the program, we'll talk about the nostalgic suggestions for your summer road trip. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the federal funding cuts that could hit public broadcasting. My guests are CET and Think TV President and CEO Kitty Lensman and Cincinnati Public Radio President and CEO Richard Eisworth. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We have Larry on the line. He asks, is there a threat that NPR stations could be taken over by commercial radio? He's wondering if the Ad Council would like to do that for any stations that can no longer be viable. Rich, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, we are licensed as a non-commercial entity, and we're in the non-commercial spectrum, the lower band of the FM band. So by law, currently, as under the FCC rules and regulations, a commercial entity couldn't assume control of our broadcast licensee, a broadcast license. Now, of course, the FCC could change that, but to be honest, I would be surprised that most commercial broadcasters would like to see further competition. You know, it's one thing to be in a competition with a full-time news operation or a classical service or a jazz service, which most public radio stations are. But if we suddenly overnight started broadcasting Beyonce or country music, we'd be, you know, eating at their dinner table, and they wouldn't like that. So they're perfectly content, by and large, most commercial stations, with public radio stations staying in our lane because we are appealing to a dramatically different audience and not really threatening them.
We have another caller on the line. Hi, Kathy. Thanks for listening. What is your question or comment?
Hi. I just want to say that I value public media very much, and I think that this conversation is operating on a very high-level sort of policy level, as if we were talking to lawmakers and grant makers. And I think that when we're talking about rural communities, rather than talking about it from the loss of the station, I think we need to be listener-focused and audience-focused and talking about what that would mean to the rural community and the listeners and what they would be losing. And so just to take that to Cincinnati, I just find it very difficult to get local news on what's happening with our city and our county and our state. And so I think the loss of public media would impoverish just the citizenry and what we're able to sort of participate with and know about in what's happening in our civic environment. So I think switching the conversation would be probably helpful.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy. Rich, what do you think we would lose in Cincinnati if we lost Cincinnati Public Radio?
It would be an irreplaceable service. To give you some perspective, you know this better than I, what's going on in the news, in the news field in Ohio in the last 10 years. Just the state of Ohio, more than 200 newspapers have gone dark, either daily or weekly. There are now news deserts across Ohio that never existed before. In those areas, public radio is the only source of news, national, local, regional, international. And we know that happens within the coverage area of our stations. And were we to go silent overnight, granted, a lot of people have access to the internet, but broadband is not universally available in this country yet. So there are a lot of rural areas because of the nature of topography, how rural and distant they are, and economic issues where people don't have access to the internet as much as easily as people in an urban area do. So those are significant factors that have to play into what public radio, public TV was originally chartered to be, a universal service free of charge for every citizen of the United States. And that's a commitment we made and we want to maintain.
K Katie, can you address that from your perspective? I mean, Kathy said, you know, was talking about what we would lose without public radio stations, but what about without public television stations, CET and Think TV?
Certainly, Lucy. Well, one of the things unique to Ohio, and I thought that was a very good comment by that listener, by the way, there are 8 Ohio public television stations, and we all broadcast the Ohio Government Channel, which is a pass-through feed that's recorded in Columbus with the 3 branches of government, the House, Senate, and the Supreme Court, and delivered to the citizens of Ohio in 99% of the counties. That's unprecedented. You know, in a time when politics and cultures are changing or unpredictable, for the American citizen to be able to turn to public television and listen to what is exactly being said by our legislators, I find that extremely important to have that information. So that would be a loss. If we did not, we broadcast that free of charge to the Ohio Government Channel. If we weren't around, our public wouldn't be able to see it. But again, I would go back to even the localized services that we offer our community. We, you know, have workshops for children and schools, and we do professional development for teachers. If we weren't around, there's nobody to do those services. And that's part of our mission. It's core to who we are. I think that, you know, if you look, 50% of families cannot afford to have a formal preschool service for their child to prepare them, you know, for kindergarten or for education. Public television is that resource for those families. And if we're not around, that is just a loss that is irreplaceable.
We have Chuck on the line. Hi, Chuck. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi. Thank you so much for this program. I'm a longtime listener, longtime supporter, and the moral mission of government is to protect and empower us. And NPR and PBS do that. And the reason you're under attack is that fascism doesn't appreciate that moral mission. Can you talk a little bit about the role of a free press in protecting democracy?
Thank you, Chuck. I'm going to pause you there. Rich, would you like to address that?
I'm not going to address whether the current administration in Washington is leaning fascist or not, but it is true that that's part of the playbook of, if you look historically at fascist organizations, fascist governments. The first target is media, and take over the media and have the media parrot what the people in power wish. Now, I think there are clear differences of opinion as to what role public media should play in this country, but I think it is important to put everything in perspective. One of the things I like to reference is the fact that every major industrialized democracy on planet Earth has a government-supported public media organization. Unfortunately, and well, from our standpoint, in all of those areas and all those nations except for the United States, the amount of support those organizations get from their governments is substantial. In the United States, it works out to be about 0.001% of the federal budget. We think there's a great deal of improvement there, but to be made. But that being said, we think there is a critical role of public media in the national dialogue that needs to be preserved. And if I may, there's one additional thing I want to mention. One thing I always hear from critics is, well, you don't need to be on the government dole. You should be operating as a business and survive in the marketplace. The simple fact of the matter is the programming we offer here doesn't survive in a commercial marketplace. There is no broadcast nationwide news service available on commercial radio. There are no viable commercial FM classical stations. We are a public service. We can operate as a business, but we're not a business. We are, you wouldn't expect and couldn't expect a library to survive as a commercial enterprise, nor could you expect a church. Well, some churches maybe, but there are services that a democracy should be able to provide. You don't expect a fire department or a police department to operate as a commercial enterprise. That's akin to what public media provides. It's a service. It can't survive in the commercial marketplace, but it is valuable and critical to the survival of the democracy.
Thanks so much for that call, Chuck. We appreciate it. And thanks for your longtime listening and support. We got a question from Sue. We got a question from Steve, or a comment from Steve. He wants to encourage listeners to go to Protect My Public Media. Kitty, would you like to explain what that site is?
Sure. It's a grassroots organization that is advocating on public media's behalf. And you can go to protectmypublicmedia, all one word, .org. And there are there's information how to contact your legislators. I would encourage anybody to reach out to your to our state senators, Senator Marino and or Senator Husted, and voice your concerns. Now is the time. Now is the time that we need the voice of our public to stand up for public media. And I wanted to add one thing, Lucy, if I may, to what Rich was saying. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting was actually created as a public-private partnership, and it was created by Congress, and it was created to protect the public from being biased against any administration that was in office at the time. That's why it's the funding is appropriated 2 years in advance. So I think that the original legislators that created and supported the Corporation for Public Broadcasting did so to protect it from a rescission package like we're seeing today. The package, if that package was to be voted through, the funding for our stations would decrease, or would go away, eliminate as of October 1st this year. And those dollars were actually voted and approved by Congress 2 years ago. So it's not much time even to be able to react, you know, in a budgetary cycle.
Well, we will continue to follow this. We may have to have you all back. I've been talking with Cincinnati Public Radio President and CEO Richard Eisworth and CET and Think TV President and CEO Kitty Lensman. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, are you planning a road trip this summer? We have some scenic suggestions coming your way. This is Cincinnati Edition.